everybody. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind here on WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial. Hi, everybody. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind here on WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial, bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. In the studio with me today, Linda Vanella. Linda, welcome back to WBAI.
Thank you, Armand. It's a pleasure to be here with you.
We've got this unusual schedule, as usual. Nowadays, unusual has become more than usual. But we're with you today, and today we're presenting with you a program about relationships that I think you are going to get a great deal from. And then tomorrow there will be a two-hour special, 2 hours on, which is going to be fascinating, which has to do with early development, love and narcissism. So be sure to tune in between 1 and 3 tomorrow. That's on Wednesday. But today we're going to talk about love itself. Never trusting love. You know, there are many people who go through life and never, ever trust enough to love. You may think you do, but throughout most people's lives, they find a reason to distrust love itself. Or distrust loving and being loved. So one of the questions we have is, why do people fear close relationships? What goes on in the brain that makes you not want to make that connection, number one? Number two is that connection silly anyway? Maybe you shouldn't have it. You know, maybe this is all an illusion. Maybe loving somebody is just some kind of thing that Hallmark cards produced. That's a question. The only difficulty that I have with that question is, I know for sure that loving feels so much better than not loving. And I guess so do all of you. So let's go with the masses instead of being a Buddhist who says no attachment is better than attachment. I think there is a loving no attachment, but I think being attached is a nice thing. Let's go with the assumption that people want to be attached, which may be wrong. I've been wrong in my life. It's very likely that when I get up to the pearly gates, I'm going to say to them, but I loved, and they say, yeah, goodness, what's love? Has no meaning anyway. So we're going to look instead. We're going to look at it as if it does exist and as if it is real and as if it does matter. You didn't know I knew the word Ganesh, do you? Right? Yeah, because I'm a Goyim. I was brought up by so many people who spoke Hebrew that I picked up phrases all along the way, which I'm proud of and I love to use. Okay, here we go. Why do we fear close relationships? Now, although we want to be loved and we want to love, I say we fear both. For many of us, our past experiences are programmed to associate loving and being loved with unpleasant experiences, like being in childhood, like the loving of vulnerability that we have. You know, you're vulnerable, you're a child. It doesn't work. You get hurt. So it begins in early childhood when love becomes conditional. You know, when love becomes the thing that you get when you are only if you're a certain way, only if you're a good boy, only if the only if kind of loving. For these and other reasons, we develop certain fears and unconscious resistance concerning getting close to another person, opening our hearts, exposing our needs, our fears, and our feelings. We can do it with a good friend. You know, very often you do it with a good friend of the same sex. But in love relationship, there's always a little battle going on for most people. Not everybody. And if you're not one of the people who have ever suffered with love, then listen to it for other people and see how it is for other people. So for the people who have associated love with hurt, and that could be just a failed early childhood relationship with a parent. It could just be that way, not an imperfect relationship with a parent. You develop certain fears and subconscious resistance concerning getting very close to another, opening your hearts and exposing your needs, your feelings, and your fears. And these fears become an obstacle towards creating a harmonious relationship, especially with a romantic love partner. This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. We're trying to look at the reasons that people fear close relationships. And not knowing it, many of us do. We fear it and we don't know it. And because we do, because we fear it and don't know it, we behave in certain ways that are against it. So, obviously, if we're affected between these fears, the connection between love and pain, we develop various defense mechanisms. What is a defense mechanism? It's a way of protecting yourself. Because one of the worst things that happen when you love too much, especially as a child, is this feeling of vulnerability. It's nice to be vulnerable. Did you ever get a puppy laying on the floor and you're scratching its belly? And it's a vulnerable puppy, and it's laying up there, and it's letting you scratch its belly because it knows you're not going to hurt it. Trick that puppy once while you're scratching its belly. Trick it once and throw water on it or something, and that's the end of scratching this puppy's belly. Well, that's what vulnerability is to all of us. You know, there we are having our belly scratched, and then we get hurt. Now, everybody wants to assume that it's somebody in our adulthood who hurt us. But I'm willing to bet that most of us have set this up to choose the wrong person, or many people just choose the wrong person so that they throw water on you while they're scratching your belly, so that it's really part of your plan, your way of staying invulnerable. So we develop subconscious resistance concerning very getting close to people, opening our hearts, exposing our needs. And I wanted to go through a list of the different ways that we do it. Because, as I said, it's a major obstacle towards a harmonious relationship. Obviously, we're affected by this connection between love and pain. We'll develop various defense mechanisms. We also develop behaviors that will sabotage our relationships. We supposedly seek to create or improve. When we're defensive, we are unpleasant and unloving. So if you were to ask the question, if you have a relationship with somebody who's being unpleasant with you, you could ask yourself, why are they being unpleasant with me? Why are they so unpleasant? And the answer is that they feel defensive. They are reacting in a defensive mode. They don't want to feel something. They're afraid. If I feel vulnerable, you could hurt me. What are these different fears that someone feels that makes them not reach into their highest, most loving self, especially when you know they can? And if you learn enough about this, when you see it, you don't take it right on and decide to fight it. You look at it and you say, oh, okay, there it is. Maybe I'm doing something to create this reaction in the other person. Or let's say you think the other person is being run hormonally, chemically, or by a lack of sleep or something. You know, if you see it, you don't have to challenge it. You could just look and find your way around it so that that person believes that you're on their side, not against you. So one of the reasons, I'm going to go through a list of reasons. We feel vulnerable. We're afraid of being hurt if we're open and loving and thus prefer to keep an emotional distance. In such a case, we need to remember that love never creates the pain. What creates the pain is attachment, expectation, and need. Attachment. I'm afraid of being on my own. I am connected to you in such a way that I couldn't stand alone. Expectation. I anticipate and hope that you are going to behave in such a way as to serve exactly what I expect of you. And need, I'm depending on you. I need you to give to me. These three things get in the way. In such a case, okay, so here's another, let's go to another. We don't want to give other people the idea that they can do whatever they like with us. Our fear of being controlled causes us unnecessarily defensive reaction. Now, do you ever have a fear of being controlled by the other person? Do you ever have that? It's a very interesting thing. I love this. When people have a fear of being controlled, they are usually told by other people who want to control them that they're being controlled by the other person. It invariably happens. So let's say your mother-in-law is controlling your husband. And you're saying to her, your mother's trying to control you. What really is happening is you're trying to control her. And you want your mother-in-law as just a competitor for this control. So usually the accusations of control come from a competitor for controlling you. And so when someone says to you, your husband's trying to control you, it means I want to control you. And somebody's in my way. But why do we have a fear of being controlled? What could happen to us? What could happen to you if I controlled you? You know, what am I going to do? Get you to raise your hand? Get you to steal money from somebody's pocket? What are you going to do? How much control can a human have over another human? Only as much as they want you to have. Children are different. But in an adult relationship, the amount of control that one person can exercise over another is usually in direct proportion to the amount of control that a person wants exerted over them. A lot of people feel wild and crazy. They feel so out of their minds they don't know what to do with themselves. They want somebody to come along, saddle them, put a harness on them, keep them in place. A lot of people do that. They just say, find me somebody strong enough to handle me. And then what I'm going to do is I'm going to fight that person so much that they will feel frustrated. And what the other person does is they give up trying to control you and handle you. And then you say, they were too weak in the first place. Not my kind of guy. Not my kind of gal. It's such a beautiful spin. But it just proves that if you've been through that a number of times, my friend, if you've gone through loving and having been through this control issue and the fear and the vulnerability and being hurt issue a number of times, you know it ain't them, it's you. It's what you're picking, it's the way you're playing, and it's the game you're playing and who you're playing with. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. Second half of today's program, we're going to take your calls because it'll be the very last time that we could take your calls for a month because we're going on a month of fundraise. Then the only calls we want to take, and we do want to get them starting tomorrow at 1 o'clock, we take your donations because we want donations for the station to keep the program going. We'll talk about that tomorrow. But people who can't afford to give, if you want to give your time, it's very good to call the station and try to arrange to be down here to answer some phones for folks. All right. Getting free from the fear of being controlled is an amazing thing because it's an illusion. Now, how about we fearing to lose control over them by being too relaxed with somebody else? Controlling others with negative emotions and a lack of love is more harmful to us, the controllers, than it is to the other person. You know, who's that on your cell phone? What is that thing you're doing? What's this? You know, that kind of stuff. The attempt to control them hurts you more than it hurts them. It builds up a bitterness on their side, but it does not create a nice life. But there's nothing you could do. You're damaged. You're scared. You don't know what to do. Are they going to go off and hurt you, you know? If you're somebody who's very strong, for example, and if you're somebody who gets very angry very often, you probably have a relationship with someone who is intimidated by you. They get intimidated by your anger, your wrath, You know, you could just be so loud, so screaming, that they say, ah, what the hell? I'm going to let them yell and scream as much as they want, and I'll nod my head, and I'll say yes and sure and all that stuff. But I won't fight them back. Well, the yellers and the screamers actually get the other person to lie about everything. They know that if they tell you the truth about something, you're going to have this overreaction. So one of the ways of avoiding love is to get into the game of yelling at each other and trying to control each other, placing the blame for our dissatisfaction with ourselves or our lives on someone else who is responsible. I can't tell you how many people I hear who blame their lives on their mates. I would have a house, I would have a business, I would have this, she wanted that. Blame, you know. Blaming somebody when things go wrong. So it's either you move forward and you take a choice to the fact that your reality was your own, but blaming other people for the way things come out doesn't work to develop a healthy, happy, loving set of being. So Linda's gone through a great deal of these. Linda, what are some of the other ones that we see?
Well, we falsely believe oftentimes that love requires that we must let that person do whatever it is he or she wants to do. And that is often a mistaken perception of love. Because we not only have the right, but also the obligation to expect that the other interacts with us in a justified way. So this can be done with love and respect towards each other, you know, and for each other. So I think that that's what we oftentimes fear, that we must let the other person do whatever it is that they feel is appropriate or not appropriate. And that is intimidating, and it oftentimes makes people reluctant to move forward in a love relationship.
Well, are you saying that if a person wants to do something that does not within the ethical realm that you believe in, that you should not say anything about it, or you should say something about it? What are you saying? If they don't agree with you ethically, morally, if they want to do something morally that doesn't fit your scheme, like I was the other day, I remember a couple of people were getting together and they were going to have a card night. And they were going to have a card night. And one of them stood up and said, hey, wait a minute, I'm a teacher in the schools, and one of the people you've invited to this is an 18-year-old. Who's going to play cards. But during that time, I will not gamble with an 18-year-old. I am too much a believer in the fact that they should not be gambling, you know, and we certainly as adults shouldn't be showing it to 18-year-olds. Quite an ethical statement.
Yes, I agree. I agree. But I think that while that might be certainly feasible and noble to exercise, I think that even becomes more difficult as two people grow intimately. And I think that because you want so much to connect, that oftentimes a person will feel maybe a little bit reluctant to say, gee, that's just not comfortable to me, or I just don't think that ethically, because I think we all feel we don't want to judge, and I think ethics is relative. So what might be right for me might not be right for you. So therefore, is this going to create a schism? Or will this be a demonstration of our integrity that we can be able to respect each other's ethics or morals?
We also believe, a lot of us identify with this role of victim, and we need to feel hurt and abused. Now, this is a statement of power. If we feel you look to find your self-worth in the role of victim or abused, and many people do this, that's why we have therapists. You have therapists so that you can hire somebody who you could tell this to. You have people do your nails so that you could talk to them, even though they may not speak English, about what a victim you are, right? You have people who are captive audiences. You know, in the 12-step programs, you could generally talk and not get any crosstalk, and you could say what a victim you are and how you've been a victim, even though you'll be encouraged to own your own stuff. But the basis of it is, if I am the victim, then I have the right to feel bad, and that I have the right to be angry, and therefore, since I am a victim, I am worthy. Now, that's such an interesting thing. Because I'm the victim, I am worthy. I can't tell you the number of people who have sent me emails telling me that they deserve to get certain things, even from me and from other people, because they are the victims.
I think, Armand, it's really an example of what we just talked about, ethics. I think that when we can find their self-worth in the role of a victim, that it means basically that the other is bad and that I am good and thus worthy. So there's an ethics there and a judgment there that oftentimes people just don't want to hone in on. They don't want to feel that. So it's oftentimes easier to blame the other rather than to take responsibility that I am indeed making myself a victim. I don't think people like to even think about that, never mind hone in on that and be accountable for it. But it's certainly something that I think is really important for us all to do a self-assessment on.
Because there's power in it. Exactly. You know, Linda, there's power in being the victim. Because like you said, that means somebody else is at fault. Therefore, I need to be protected. Whenever you get somebody who seems like they are the victim of someone else, you can be sure there's power in both places. There are some true victims. I'm not saying that there aren't. But usually in household place where people have choices of relationships, when you see a victim who stays there all the time, you can be sure the power of the victim is in being the victim. And so if you try to point it out and say, there, you're wrong for being the victim, now the power of the power is on the person who's blaming the victim, right? Shift of power. Hey, don't be a victim. That puts the victim, puts the power in my hands. Mm-hmm. Somewhere along the line, if people get caught in victimhood, you know, they've just inevitably, they can't find that true place with each other that they're going to look for. So, you know, how about this? Have you ever thought there are things about myself that I want to tell you, but I'm not going to tell you because I'm afraid you're going to use it against me in the future? I'm afraid you're going to use it in the future. And you get afraid that you're reluctant to tell people things about you because they're going to use it somewhere in the future and they're going to use this stuff against you. That's another one of the things that people do. They keep secrets to themselves. Secrets. I have secrets, parts of myself I can't tell my partner. Or I'll never tell my husband. Or I'll never tell my wife this about me. Because they would use it against me. Well, what does that mean? That means in the middle of an argument, they're going to say, just like your mother, just like your father. Well, so what? So what? So they say such a thing. So they're pulling out their stops. If you were really loving somebody else, when they said such a thing, you'd say, boy, are they feeling hurt? Are they feeling really defensive right now? Look at them pulling out all the stops. If the wound is so big that if somebody says to you, just like your mother, go take care of it. Go find out why you're so afraid of being identified with your mother. Right? Go take care of that instead of stop trying to stop them from having this tool over you. So when we're afraid of expressing love, sometimes we're afraid of saying, I love you, because we're afraid the other person's not going to say it back. You know, I love you too, whatever that means. I love you too. If I say I love you, very often people say I love you just so they can get the echo. You know, I want to say I love you so I can find out I'm all right with you. You know, honey, I love you. Yes, I had to work late at night. Yes, there's lipstick on my collar, but yes, I ran into this lady who fell against me in the subway. That's what happened. You know how much I love you, right? So please keep quiet and don't start doubting me. This is Armand DeMille with you with Linda Vanella. We're talking about things that people do to avoid getting close. Why does somebody want to avoid getting close? If you're the average person who's running around in life, you've always lied to your lovers. In one form or another, you lie to them. You don't tell them the truth in one way or another. You tell them you hide parts of yourself. You hide your body. You don't get dressed in the open, you know. You do things. There's always a lie, a fib, a little thing you tell. That's a guarantee sign that you distrust the love itself. And the experience of being loved, of actually feeling yourself loved by another person, is an intensely, intensely vulnerable feeling. I don't know of a more vulnerable feeling. Vulnerable and invulnerable at the same time, but that's a little complex. Truly vulnerable. To let yourself be loved is to just bare your belly, you know? And it's scary. It's scary, but the reward is so incredible. The reward is so mighty. It's so powerful because through another person, you join not only the other person, but you join the universe. You feel connected to everything. Of course, we also fear failing in a relationship. And in this case, we have the choice to risk failing or create a life without love, as many people have. They're just tired of failing again. And so they give up. I have a life without love. I'll just date. I just won't have that intimacy. Because we're afraid that we will also become weak. Weak. Eventually, that we'll be begging for love in such a way that we will be, somebody can just step on us and tread on us and not have, and we won't have what we have left. Ah, but there's a beauty in here. Hey, listen, today during the break, we have a special thing. I have to go through all kinds of things to play music for you, but we've done it today. I want you to know that on the break, I'm going to play you the trumpet music of the world's finest ever, in my mind, trumpet player, Clifford Brown, with a musical piece that he did that was just so exquisite. So when you listen, it's not just schmaltzy music. It's exquisitely schmaltzy music, and I feel like bringing that to you. And then I also want to be taking your calls at 212-279-2900. Now, lastly and finally, why do we distrust love? Mainly, my friend, because we fear the unknown. Evolution by necessity means going where we have not been. It cannot be otherwise, or else it wouldn't be evolution. It's true in all aspects of our lives. A true love is a step of evolution for most of us. And for that, it just becomes a place of the unknown, a place that people are just really afraid of. Venture into the unknown. It's a wonderful thing. Go back to safety, hide in the cave. I fully understand that completely. You know what happens as you get older and older? You begin never trusting the intention of other people. You know, once you get past 70 or so, you start wondering if people are being kind to you because they think you may leave something for them in their will or something. You know, you begin distrusting, but that's all part of the wounded love self. We can all make it, I'm sure. We can all get through and be able to have what we want in life. So, my friends, 212-209-2900, we'll be taking your calls as soon as we get back from a call. We're going to take a, as soon as we get back from the break, we're going to play, take a short break, play some exquisite music, and Linda and I will be back, and we will take your calls. We'll be right back.
My name is Dan Ingram, and I'm a WBAI fan. They've always been, you know, the station that kicked butt and the station that said what you're not supposed to say, because the people in power don't want to hear it, and I love that.
I have to celebrate you, baby.
TalkBack is your gathering place for the free and fair exchange of information and ideas, heard here Monday through Thursday from 3 until 5 in the afternoon. I'm Hugh Hamilton. Join me as we explore the issues and events making news across the nation and around the world with expert guests, insightful analysis, and, of course, your comments, questions, and observations. That's TalkBack right here, WBAI, New York.
Thank you.
Clifford Brown. From two albums, Clifford Brown with Strings, and from Jazz Round Midnight, Clifford Brown doing Stardust. Hey, wait a minute, how does he think of that? You know, Michael G., I know, who loves trumpet as well. When you listen to Clifford Brown, you wonder, where does he come from in his brain to actually get to those specific things? So it's the same thing with Charlie Parker. Hey, tomorrow, my friends, again, I'm going to encourage you to tune in between 1 and 3 p.m. and make you a special offering around jazz as well. So be sure to tune in with us. The last part of this, we're going to take your calls right now at 212-209-2900, but the last part of this that I want to bring to you, there are three more things, right? We leave the relationship first so as not to experience rejection or abandonment. I can't tell you how many people I know who don't know how to say, I'm staying in here and I'm going to work with you and this is the way we're going to make it work. And they're just people who keep saying, maybe I shouldn't be in this, maybe I should leave, maybe I should leave, maybe I should leave. That way works, but then it makes the other person want to strangle you. And then you wonder why they want to strangle you, because they have a feeling that if you leave, they want to put shackles on you. They want to hold you down. They want to tie you down because you've always got this threat. If you say to somebody, I'm committed to be here, I'm not going anywhere. Now let's work this out. That's a whole different issue. That's a person who has got a commitment to trying to get the best out of love. If it's going to be, I got to get out of here, I got to get out of here, I got to get out of here. The other person is always going to be holding back a little too. So if you're going to be there, be there. Hang in. What's going to happen? You're going to die? Stay there. Talk about it. Work it out. If you can't talk about it and work it out, stay there anyway. Take a shower together. Do something. Find a solution. Work at a solution, not going away. And the other is we have this other fear, which is something that sneaks up on us and kicks us in the butt, bites us in the butt. It does something to our butt. And that's this fear that we have a relationship just like our parents. Oh, my gosh almighty. Well, many of you saw relationships with your parents that were kind of wonderful. Many of you did. I could think of, you know, some great relationships between people. And sometimes you wish that your mother, your man would treat you like your father treated your mother. You could wish that. But that's still wind up in the same kind of relationship. Because in what shape was your mother while this was all going on? And vice versa. So we fear this thing, and it happens to us. You suddenly get to a point in a relationship where you're screaming just the way your father did, or just the way your mother did, or you're doing just what your father did, or just what your mother did. And so as soon as that echo goes off in our head, it gives us a sense of panic. I have to run. I have to run. It's perfectly natural for you to be doing things that your parents did. That's what you learned in the first place. So you're going to repeat under pressure. You're going to repeat the patterns that you saw in childhood. That's okay. You get through that too. Hard lessons. Hard lessons. It takes such an amount of integrity. It takes such a terrific desire to have something real, which many of you claim you want. But I'll tell you, if you had to fight, if you had to have a war, if you had to go through basic training, if you had to go on a diet, you might find all of that possibility. The last thing that I'm going to bring to you is the responsibility of a relationship. Responsibility. We have every right to live alone and not enter into a personal love relationship that is naturally accompanied by certain commitments and responsibilities. Some people choose to live alone. That makes sense. In fact, almost everybody I've ever met who is alone wants to be alone. Because they've kind of chosen the partner that says alone is the only safe place to be. The question is whether or not you're choosing it because you're being guided by your soul to do it, or whether you're doing it out of fear. That's the question. Mostly it's out of fear, because this other thing that is available, as you all know, is exquisite. You just be powerless about trying to get to it.
I think that it's really important to understand that what you're speaking about, Armand, is to be not only responsible, but really conscious as well as motivated, so that you would really have a sense of your own self. And all of the things that you've demonstrated today, I think, is good food for thought to understand, is it that I want to be alone, or is it that I'm afraid of entering into a relationship and loving? So that I think while we perhaps find ourselves in different places within our lives, and there might be reasons why, that we need to just look at, you know, the power that love and a love relationship can offer us, and perhaps the responsibility and all that we're speaking about is well worth it.
We know it has a payoff.
Yes.
We know it has the payoff. And transient relationships is not the payoff. Good for now only is not the payoff. Trying for the big number is definitely worthwhile, no matter what your age. I saw a beautiful film the other day about how a couple of people tripped over each other in their 60s and found a fabulous relationship. Fabulous. It was like a film true life story kind of thing. It's always lovely to see. And if you think you're unavailable, if you think you're too old, too fat to have it, it's not true. Somebody, for everybody who's alone, there's somebody else out there who wishes they weren't alone. This is Armand DeMille. We're going to take your calls, 212-209-2900. Let's take one of your calls. You're on the air. Hi, this is Armand DeMille. Hello there.
Hello?
Hello, and thank you for waiting.
I didn't know it was Dr. DeMille, it's a pleasure and an honor always to talk to you.
Thank you. Who is this?
My name is Nick. I live in Seacliff, Long Island. I'm a retired police sergeant, and I have an interesting situation, because before I became a police officer, I was a social worker for 2 years with New York State.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, I learned a lot. My education took me through a bachelor's in criminal justice and psychology, and then a master's in the related field. And what you are speaking about is the introjection, how a person can introject the parent.
Yep. Have you done that?
Well, I think all of us do to some degree, because, you know, your values are caught. They're not taught. You catch them. You catch them at an unconscious level. Actually, this is the subject of my own book that I'm writing as a law enforcement book. And what's
Nick, be more specific rather than just telling people about them.
Right.
How has your, what has been the since you understand this,
yes,
and I think it's very valuable,
okay,
there's a thing called a negative parental interject.
Yes.
A negative parental interject is when you swallow the worst part of your parent and you incorporate it as part of your life.
Right.
Right? And then you see it and you say, what is this thing doing inside me? Almost like it's some kind of a bug, you know, an alien. And you look to cut it out of your life in some way, and you say, I got to deal with this because I don't want to be this way. Have you had that in your life?
Yes, I have.
All right. What was the negative parental introject of Nick?
My father, who unfortunately at 88 years of age has dementia, Alzheimer's, was a very brilliant man. He was a police officer and a New York City firefighter, and he was absolutely brilliant. He went to school about a year and a half of college. And he was in the military. But I would rank him, I would put him up to any PhD that I know.
Okay.
That's how smart he is, or was.
So what part was the negative parental interject?
The negative part,
was he too strict?
I think he was a little bit stern in how he brought me up, but then again, I really needed
okay,
a kind
now,
of...
Okay, now, in a, his... No, let's back this up.
Yeah.
I know you love your father.
Oh, I do.
I know you love him, and I know you have a great deal of respect for him, but I'll tell you something, Nick. He was too rough on you.
Oh, yeah, he
and,
was tough
and
on
you. And you could explain all you want, but he was a little too rough. In all of his beauty,
right,
he was a little too rough. Therefore, you become a little too rough, and
yeah,
you catch yourself getting rough, and you say to yourself, I'm going to soften this part of me up. I'm not going to be that way, because you could have all the other good things about him.
Right.
But the one thing you don't want, you don't want to be that kind of a Brillo pad.
Exactly, and that's exactly how I raised my daughter, and that's exactly how I am to my grandchildren. And I think they love me more for it because, you know, they also are on the receiving end of my father, somewhat, not as much as myself. But I can tell you, when I was in law enforcement, I used to tell my guys, I used to say, excuses breed failure. Please. When people are always making excuses, okay, they're now going into the role of the victim. And when they go into the role of the victim, like you said, it's a power. They become powerful. And that whole passive-aggressive whole syndrome starts. And I used to have to deal. I used to say, look, I am not here to be Sigmund Freud. I'm here to do a job. Get a job done professionally and be done with it. I don't want to be your analyst.
Nick, you're a kind daddy. You're a kind man, and you extend that kindness. I see all around you, and I know that's your goal in life. You know, when you do finish your book, make sure you send it to me so I can take a look at it.
I certainly will, and I would be honored.
It would be my pleasure, Nick. Nice to talk to you.
Nice to talk to you again. Thank you so much, sir.
Sure.
All right. Bye-bye now.
Bye. And you see, part of what I see with Nick was that sternness he had with his father, so much so that he's got to call me sir. Armand, Nick, I call you by your first name, you got to call me sir. Really? I'm not a sir to you, my friend. But you can see it's in there, that sense of respect that's just overdeveloped. 212-209, and a beautiful man. I mean, thank God he's a police officer and social worker. He must be doing some kind stuff. 212-209-2900. Let's take another call. This is Armand DeMille. Hello there.
Hi, Armand. How are you today?
I'm good.
I'm actually calling because I just ended a 7-year relationship with a woman that I was head over heels in love with, and I tried with every ounce of my being to be with this woman, but it just could not work.
It's real tough. What do you think was the main issue that separated the two of you?
She lives with her mother. She lived with her mother her entire life, and her mother was very abusive to her. And I think because her mother is abusive to her and her daughter is abusive to her, I was trying to become like that, like verbally, emotionally. I see how other people treat her, and I almost felt as if this is what she needs to be able to be in a relationship, and that's not the kind of person I am. So I got to the point where I could no longer be with her because I am not an abusive person and I do not want to be like that.
So what's your name?
My name is Michael.
Michael, so then one would wonder why you chose to love someone who clearly has a history of being abused and is that's their preference of love form. I mean, you would come along and say, I'm going to save you. See, you're this person who's always being abused. I'm going to save you. And then after a little while, you realize, hey, they don't want to be saved. They really have this penchant for abuse. But how could it take 7 years for you to realize that? So some part of you is fighting out your own battle. See,
well,
some part of you. So I'm gonna take this back for you just a little bit, okay?
And
I want you to answer for me, Michael, if you could. Would you say that your dad abused your mother?
My dad absolutely abused my mother.
That's it. So there's the answer. The answer is you're fighting a battle to save your mother. And because it looks like love relationship, it gets all mixed up. See, so the battle originated back then. So you're learning. You're saying to yourself, okay, I'm not going to be anybody's savior. I'm not going to be my mother's savior. I'm not going to be anybody else's savior. I'm going to get somebody who could share life with me. And that's your next step. That's your next step. This was a learning experience.
Well, you know? I lost my mother to chemotherapy when I was only 8.
Yeah.
My father remarried an abusive woman who was abusive to me. So I was also abused myself and for many years, and then finally ran away, lived in group homes, foster homes, and I've actually been through a lot, and I've made it through a lot.
I could hear.
I've come a long way. I'm definitely a strong being because of it.
Well, good for you, Michael. Good for you. You're a strong being. What I'm suggesting to you is don't save any lives. Save your own. Save your own. There'll be somebody out there who just wants to give to you as well. Okay, thanks for calling in.
Thank you very much.
212-209-2900. Let's take another call. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Armand. This is Robert.
Hello, Robert.
How are you?
Good.
I heard something that you and Linda were talking about earlier on that sort of triggered something in me, because it's become sort of a cliche that the victim, in this case myself, is somehow volunteering to be the victim and not choosing to be responsible for their own feelings.
Not exactly.
Okay. Maybe that's the way I heard it. Because
yeah, not you know, this word responsible for your own feelings, I almost don't believe in that at all.
A larger sense of responsible, though.
Yeah, it's not
in the sense that the person can control what they feel, but they are responsible for how they respond.
Yeah. See, the thing that we were trying to make clear that's so interesting is that the role of victim is a role of power. You see, it's once you claim, and once you are perceived as the victim, then that means automatically somebody else is wrong, and you're in a place of power. And that's what people don't understand, is that choosing victimhood very often is the only way that people have of choosing power. That's the uniqueness
of
this
perception. I kind of agree
with that. Yeah, I'm sure. I disagree with it too, by the way, somewhat.
I'm trying to speak for the victim community, because as a person who's been victimized by an aggressive, abusive mother growing up, I find that there's a quick antidote to feeling that sense of helplessness and self-loathing that comes with being a victim, which is to have somebody validate or be a compassionate witness to what actually happened. Then I don't have to cling to my feeling of victimhood anymore, and I feel free to basically explore what my options are emotionally to take care of myself.
Oh, sure. Now, keep in mind, I'm only talking about victimhood in adult relationships.
Oh,
I'm not
okay.
Talking about children.
Okay.
But I think you're right. I think you're right, actually, to choose to be with someone who could validate you is somewhat healing, for as long as you don't need to be the victim. So it works two ways, but this is not, I'm not talking about children abuse.
Yeah, now I see. It isn't. But very often, adult relationships just mirror the, as we know, just mirror, for me, it just mirrors the other fundamental relationships that I grew up with.
Well, that's exactly what I'm talking about today. I'm trying to expose that to show that this mirror is a lesson for us. It's what we could see. And if we could work by knowing as opposed to not knowing and ignoring, we can choose a much better way of being. We could evolve. The word evolution and relationships evolve. Because in nature, to evolve means to be going into the unknown, go into some place you don't know. And that means leaving a comfortable place, which is usually neurotic relationships, to go into a relationship where you are open, honest, and vulnerable, and fine.
And I don't think that can be done solo. I think that for a person like myself, I'll speak only for myself, I need help. I need support in order to be, there's a lot of talk about, allowing oneself to be vulnerable, but not enough talk about getting the proper support and backup in order to just be able to feel like a bird
a fledgling.
A fledgling, of course. The mother is always watching it. It's alone and vulnerable and testing new waters, but it's also, there's a sense of safety being connected to some higher source that's looking out for you as you're testing the waters.
Absolutely beautiful. What's your name again?
It's Robert.
Robert, you know, you speak really well, and you speak about somebody who has really searched through. So I think some of the major things that happen
from being in and coming out of a lot of pain.
I could hear.
And I'm trying to be honest with myself. And, therapists sometimes are not, because they will blame the victim for being a victim and then leave him to his own guilt.
Oh. I don't know what you call those therapists.
Bad therapists.
Bad therapist, right?
Gotta go, Armin. Thanks a lot.
Thanks a lot, Robert.
Bye-bye.
Bad therapist. So what's really wonderful is groups. Like this group that you're forming, Linda, that's part of the beauty of it, the being able for women to be able to, you're doing just a women's group, right?
Yes, Armand, I am. But I thank you, Robert, for that call. But may I just say one thing? When we're speaking about groups, Armand, it's that victimization stagnation that really becomes a dead-end place, that people become more frightened and they go back to that vulnerable, frightened feeling, which I must say, I know well what I believe Robert is stating, and we certainly can see that. But in a group, it's something that we can oftentimes be able to identify and see, well, wait a minute, that's not going to get us anywhere. So let's move on from there. So, yes, I'm looking forward to beginning my group, and I believe Robert and many other people would be wonderful candidates to look into getting into a group, because those kinds of issues could be very well discussed. And
well, I'm sure he is, though, getting the right support, like you said.
Yes.
You know, this is Armand DeMille with you with the positive mind. Thank you, Linda. This is the last shot we have of being able to take these calls today. Thank you for the callers, and I'm sorry to the callers who did not get through to us today, but we will be back with you tomorrow at 1 p.m., and we'll be bringing you more exciting programming and a premium offer. And don't forget to support WBAI however you can, including, if you can, bringing down some of the coming down to answer the phones, or even arranging to get food to the place. Just, you know, it's a good place, BAI. Give it all the support you got. You want to get in touch with me or Linda, you could go to armand@thepositivemind.com, and we'll get your emails. Thanks a lot for calling in, my friends. Bye-bye for now.